For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Martin McCloskey on fire. This is Martin McCloskey on fire.
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mark McCloskey, Mark McCloskey on fire. We start just about every show with a comment about how every word that you hear in the mainstream media and from the federal government is an outright lie. And we demonstrate that week after week. But one of the most outrageous things and probably the most evil thing that's happened to us in my 67 years of walking around the planet is the COVID pandemic, the alleged vaccine response, and the absolute conspiracy of our government and hundreds of other governments around the planet to launch upon the believing gullible population, A, this manufactured virus, if you want to call it a virus, and then B, compounding the evil by creating a vaccine and foisting it upon the public as an experimental drug given to everybody, including pregnant women and young children, which is the most offensive thing to me, and selling it to religious organizations, to ostracizing anybody that had the guts to stand up against it. And if you didn't go along with the official protocol, with the official propaganda regarding COVID and the vaccine, then you'd be ostracized, hounded out of your profession, and destroyed professionally. And we happen to have with us here today one of the champions of the truth on COVID and on the vaccines, a man who has been subjected to an unending bombardment of hate and ridicule for having the guts to tell the truth. And so welcome with us today, Dr. James Thorpe. Welcome to the program, doctor.
You know, Mark, it's such an honor and a privilege to meet with you and visit with you. And I'm surprised you didn't introduce me by my real last name.
We found out yesterday when I was talking to Dr. Thorpe that he's actually a McCloskey and probably related because our families come from the same part of this big nation of ours.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm really sorry to say that every single word that you spoke in the introduction there about the state of affairs in our government and the world, I'm really sorry to say that it's absolutely 100% correct, and I can prove it.
Well, tell us first, give the audience a flavor of how you were received in the medical community before you had the gall to contradict the powers that be on COVID.
Well, I was extraordinarily well received. I was honored my whole career. I've been practicing for 45 years. I'm in active practice now. I was a leader. I'm extensively published. I've extensively testified, you know, all over the world, including in 2003 by the Bush administration as an expert, a global expert in terms of closed fetal surgeries, which I can define later. But the whole point of them asking me to be an expert witness in 2003 in the United States Senate was to describe to the people, the congressmen, why a fetus is treated as a patient. And the purpose of that was to overturn partial birth abortion. And, you know, nobody else, I was a leader at the time. I've been honored and awarded and on board of directors of the Society for Maternal Fetal Medicine, given numerous research awards by the American College of OBGYN, and by the American Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology, I was an actual board examiner in the 90s, if you can believe that. So, you know, I've been honored my entire career, of course, testifying for the Bush administration to overturn partial birth abortion, which they did. Unfortunately, it was reinstated by President Obama years later. But the fact of the matter is that that was a lethal blow to me professionally, because of course most of my colleagues are rabid. They love killing babies and terminating life in the womb and finding whatever excuse they can to do that. So I didn't make myself too well liked by my colleagues by that testifying. But so I've been really well received. I'm extensively published. And of course, that all changed in year 2000.
And your subspecialty in OBGYN is high risk obstetrics?
Yes, I'm to this very day, I'm still board certified, lifetime board certified in obstetrics and gynecology, and board certified in subspecialty called maternal fetal medicine, more commonly known as high risk obstetrics.
Okay.
So there's very few of us in the country. You know, there's about 60,000 OBGYNs, but from what I understand, practicing in the 50 states, there's only about 1,200 or 1,400 of us that are doubly boarded in OBGYN and in maternal fetal medicine.
So tell us what happened in 2020.
Well, what happened was that, you know, I had slowly garnered a lot of skepticism for what was being published in the medical journals and foisted on the American people at around the turn of the century. You know, I started looking more. Listen, I'm not an anti-vaxxer. Goodness gracious. I'm a military veteran. I'm an officer, United States Air Force officer, disabled, fully vaxxed my children. I even push vaccines in pregnancy, the flu vaccine and the Tdap vaccine up until, I don't know, 10 years or so ago. But when I began questioning the narrative, I realized that, you know, the medical journals, as a former editor, lead editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, Dr. Marshall Angel, stated at the turn of the century, she resigned because the New England Journal of Medicine and other medical journals were terminally, corporately, kleptocratically compromised by the pharmaceutical industry. You know, that's what she said. And I took that as really serious and then started doing my due diligence. And then when 2020 hit and this pandemic hit, I was convinced there was a problem because the first thing they villainized was early treatment. Well, you know, early treatment of any disease has been a longstanding, rule of for six millennia. Since all healers existed, we all know no matter what the disease is, no matter what the condition, the sooner you implement treatment, the safer it is. But what were we done? We were told to stay home till you're dying blue in the face, then come on into the hospital so we can finish off the job and kill you.
Well, you know, my first introduction to this was when I was out in a campaign swing through West Texas, and I met a Dr. Richard Bartlett, and he was trying to rescue a COVID patient from the hospital where they were trying to do what everybody was having done to him in those days is restrict their access to care until they had to be intubated and then kill them. And then from Dr. Bartlett, then Dr. Peter McCullough, and watched him testify in front of the Texas Senate. And it became apparent to me that every traditional value of medicine, of early treatment, of appropriate treatment, when my dad was an ear, nose, and throat head and neck surgeon, and, you know, whenever anybody comes into the hospital, shortness of breath, what's the first thing you do? You put them on supplemental oxygen. But with COVID, you withhold the supplemental oxygen, so they have to be intubated, and then almost 100% mortality rate. And this just struck me as something which could not be coincidental. This had to be an actual evil purpose of our government to foister this upon us.
You're absolutely right. The second thing in early 2020, you know, I'd done my due diligence. I try to keep up in all aspects of medicine. But with regards to my specialty, taking care of women of reproductive age, pregnant women and preborns, Mark, I've used hydroxychloroquine for four decades, 200 milligrams twice a day. And so has most other obstetricians. And so, you know, what's interesting is most obstetricians didn't realize because they knew hydroxychloroquine not by that name. They knew it by the trade name, Plaquenil, Plaquenil. They never put two and two together. They didn't realize that the same drug that most all the obstetricians have seen their pregnant patients come in, and that medication was on their medication list. And they didn't even stop in the first trimester. So then when they published that bizarre obviously fraudulent article in May, 5 months into the pandemic, and it's published by The Lancet by Dr. Mehra, a cardiologist at Harvard. Harvard is completely captured. One of the CDC, HHS, completely captured. They pay him off regularly, have for years. So he was essentially the lead author on this article in Lancet that falsely villainized hydroxychloroquine. And look at everybody, anybody with a brain that's done research and published like me, they knew it was fraudulent because there's no way that you could have garnered 95,000 patients from all over the world in the first 5 months of the COVID and allegedly treated them with COVID-19. We all knew it was fraudulent. We all knew it was fake. And it turned out that it was fake, but it was blasted over the world. Hydroxychloroquine immediately came to a halt. I wasn't, you know, the pharmacist illegally blocked me and reported me for prescribing it, which is illegal, by the way. And then, sure enough, we demanded the data. And guess what? It was all contrived, made up by a company organization called Surgisphere. And The Lancet retracted it. But, you know, the damage was done. Every single trial in the world was stopped. It was villainized and people were afraid to death of it. And nobody said a word. And the retraction, you really needed a microscope to find it in one of their journals 5 months later in October of 2020. This was pure, Dr. Mehra is responsible for killing and injuring massive numbers of patients globally. Because as Dr. Bartlett knows, and as you know, and as Dr. Peter McCullough know, and Dr. Pierre Corey, and all of us know by now, guess what? Early treatment with those nutraceuticals and repurposed drug was 95% effective.
Yeah. I mean, that's
99%, according to some experts, if it started early.
And that's something we just need to drive home. Traditional medicine would say anything you can do in pre-hospitalization treatment that would prevent hospitalization is what needs to be done. This is the only time in the history of the world where governments and the medical industry and the pharmaceutical industry has said, withhold pre-hospitalization treatment, get people in the hospital, then withhold treatment in the hospital until they can be intubated and killed. I mean, this is murder on a massive scale, more massive than anything I've seen in my lifetime. And how did the medical community, how did it get bought off to where doctors were either too afraid to voice their opinions or so timid that they went along with it?
Well, it's very simple. He who pays the piper calls the tunes. We now know by the New York Times and by the Washington Post, these liberal news outlets, they fully admit that $5 trillion or more were rolled out of U.S. tax dollar payer monies, and nobody can account where it went. Well, we all know where it went now, especially after my attorney wife Maggie and I have published probably 14 or 15 medical legal briefs highly cited on the America Out Loud platform. We know where they came from. You know, Deputy Secretary Mark Weber in early 2021, HHS, he rolled out and he colluded with Harvard and all of their marketers. You know, how do we get everybody vaccinated? They didn't do any medical science, but I got to give them an A+. They did their marketing science. Yeah. So they talked about, quote, grabbing low hanging fruit. So they went after women, number one. They went after women. And Mark Esper, subsequently, in the typical Washington, D.C., he does his dirty work. He gets rolled out, goes to a lucrative position. Sound familiar? Like the CEO of Pfizer,
yeah.
Gottlieb, and so many others. And then they get rewarded. And he writes a book and he brags about it. So this is what they did. They rolled out a multi-million dollar, this is just one of the organizations called CCC, an acronym for COVID-19 Community Core. They captured almost 300 leaders of all over the United States of America and recruited them in, gave them large amounts of money, and the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists was just one of the groups. But I'm talking about faith leaders, you know, of all type, all the legacy media. I'm talking about the minorities. Go look at it in our article. It's extensively documented in there. And so they signed quid pro quo agreements. They gave them loans or grants. But guess what? They were forgivable if they signed on the dotted line and adhered to the lethal HHS CDC narrative. Now, in the case of the American Obstetricians and Gynecologists, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, this is a massively powerful organization. It controls 60,000 OBGYNs, not just in all 50 states of the United States of America, but all the provinces in Canada and several countries in South America. So every single one of those were controlled by ACOG, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. Then ACOG also colluded with the other two organizations that control us, the American Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology, and my subspecialty organization internationally called the Society for Maternal Fetal Medicine, of whom, by the way, I was a board of director for 3 years at the turn of the century.
Well, Doctor, we're coming up against a hard break here. Can you hang around for another segment?
Oh, you betcha.
And we're going to be right back with Dr. Jim Thorpe, the great athlete from the 30s Olympics. And no, wait, that's wrong, Jim Thorpe. We'll be back with Dr. Jim Thorpe here in just a second on Mark McCloskey on Fire.
Fighting against the New World Order. More Mark McCloskey on Fire coming up. For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com. Mark McCloskey on Fire. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about the greatest organized campaign of death and murder in the history of modern America and the modern world with Dr. James Thorpe. And doctor, in the field of maternal family medicine or high-risk obstetrics, is there something known as a golden rule amongst obstetricians?
Oh, 100%. It's ingrained by our creator in every human being without any education. It's very simple. You don't ever, ever, ever use a novel substance in pregnancy. You don't even drink alcohol. You don't eat certain cheeses, et cetera, et cetera. But listen, this generation knew this because in 1938, the drug diethylstilbestrol was rolled out. It was a bloody disaster. It caused massive carnage and killing and injury of obstetrical women from 1938 until the mid-70s, some early 80s in some areas. And that was a multi-generational poison. Daughters and sons of DES mothers that where they got it in utero have devastating illnesses, and even granddaughters and maybe great-granddaughters, multi-generational epigenetic toxicity. Probably 10 million people were exposed. It may have killed and injured over 50 million global citizens. Mm. So that's just one lesson. And, you know, everybody remembers thalidomide. Now, thalidomide was between, you know, say like 1958 to 1962. Everybody remembers that because in contrast to DES, you had the horrible visual that are still all over the books and the press of the thalidomide babies that didn't have arms and legs. So listen, just in our lifetime between DES and thalidomide, yes, that's the golden rule of pregnancy. You don't ever, ever, ever use a novel substance in pregnancy. And then they lied to us about that. They use scare, fear, pornography, and distorted, actually lied, gave false medical facts, and told women that they were more likely to die, as were their babies, if they didn't get the vaccine, which is proven to be was exactly the opposite. Studied by Beth Hennels and colleagues, another maternal fetal medicine, documented that pregnant women had one-third the risk of dying as opposed to non-pregnant women from COVID. So the whole thing was a charade. Everybody trusted their OB doctor, and they didn't recognize that their OB doctor was nothing more than a mouthpiece of propaganda for the government. And that's what happened. And then all of the hospitals were bought off by a similar, and Maggie Thorpe, JD, and myself, we proved that. We proved the capture of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists and 60,000 OBGYNs with a Freedom of Information Act request, which we published. And we've also proven how all the faith leaders were captured in this horrible White House symposium, 3.5-4 hour symposium in late May of 2021. Of course, they shut down all the churches, not just churches, all faiths, synagogues, churches, temples, imams, all faiths, shut them all down because they weren't essential. But of course, the essential businesses of strip joints, liquor joints, and gambling casinos, those were essential business. They weren't sent down.
Yeah, you know, in my faith, as a Catholic, during the Black Death, when a third of the population of Europe died, they didn't close the churches, but they closed it for COVID.
Yeah, horrible.
Just amazing.
So what they did to these faith leaders, Mark, was they turned around and, I mean, the White House, Biden, Jeffrey Zients, the chief of staff of the White House, Vivek Murthy, the Surgeon General, then Director Francis Collins, Dr. Francis Collins, and they all referred to him because he put himself across as a spiritual man, so they called him Reverend Doctor. They perpetrated the greatest huge scientific fraudulent lies on the National Symposium of Faith Leaders, and basically grotesquely said that, you know, the vaccine is a miracle from God. This is a miracle from God. They contorted scripture. The scripture of Deuteronomy, you know, that we quote in that and many other scriptures, it was just horrible. You know, where in Deuteronomy, God speaks of, you know, having to walk through a narrow place and hands raised and outstretched arms. This is their interpretation. Yep. The narrow place was the COVID infection. The outstretched hands was the God giving us a vaccine. And the reached out arm was a hand praying to receive the vaccine. And their quote from that scripture, this is our White House.
Yeah.
This is our White House in the Faith for Vaccines toolkit, is that take the vaccine so that you may live.
Yeah.
I mean, and then went on with a bizarre interpretation of New Testament scripture. This is spiritual abuse. This is an abomination of truth. So, you know, he who pays the piper calls the tunes.
Yeah. And just
an Irishman, you know that one.
Yeah, just a couple of things that just astounded me, right? For example, first they claim that the vaccines weren't going to be mandated. Then they mandate the vaccines. Then they say that the vaccine injection is going to stay in your deltoid muscle and not migrate throughout your body. And then they say, no, it's going to go everywhere in your body. And then they say it's not going to affect your native DNA. And they say, maybe it does. But the thing that killed me the most, fortunately, I've not been vaccinated, so that's not going to kill me the most. But every time you get an intramuscular injection, from the day you're born until the day you die, up until COVID, they would aspirate, right? They'd pull back in the plunger and see if they're in a vessel. We were specifically told that they were not going to do that for COVID so they could give the shot more quickly and make it less painful. Meanwhile, injecting directly into the vessel this mRNA virus.
Yeah, I mean, that may be a component of it. But the fact of the matter is, Mark, that they knew from 2010, from the Schladlich study, that the lipid nanoparticles, that's the way they were designed. These are 80 nanometer particles. These are like 1/1,000,000th of an inch. These particles were designed to cross every single God-made barrier in the body. Blood-brain barrier, blood test barrier, blood ovary barrier, the blood placental barrier, and same thing in the fetus. And we also knew from the 2010 Schladlich study that it was concentrated in the ovaries. And I'll remind you that it's the germ cells, the ovaries, not the sperm, that are the rate limiting factor for future generation. Women are only in the utero; they only have 1,000,000. Men can ejaculate, hundreds of million and make hundreds of millions per hour. Not so with a woman.
Yeah.
So these are very toxic. The Pfizer's own biodistribution study, Japanese FOIA request documented that they knew that from time of injection to 48 hours later, there was 118-fold concentration in the ovaries. And they had to hurry up and kill those animals because the slope was like this. And had they waited till 96 hours, it probably would have been up to 1,000. Does that do to all the ovaries, all the egg? It kills them off or could potentially cause mutations, permanent genetic alteration potentially.
And here's something I think you need to emphasize, because I don't know how many people realize this. Whereas as men, we generate more sperm all the time. Women are born with every egg cell they're going to have for the rest of their lives. And most people probably don't understand that. And if the injection you get today will affect every egg in your body for the rest of your life.
That's absolutely correct. And not only that, there's a natural God-made, what we call a programmed cell death called apoptosis. As soon as a baby's born, that 1 million egg count, it progressively drops down in a slow fashion. And so that what we've seen is these women of adolescent women or young girls or women of reproductive age, they're getting these injections. And now many of them will go into menopause, at age 28 or 30. Why? They don't have any eggs left. They're in menopause.
Yeah. So I know that you have done enough research to come up with some conclusions as to the effect of the vaccines on pregnancy and on pregnant women and on the unborn. Give us a flavor of how these vaccines have damaged us.
Really important point here. There's only two studies that tell the story. And this is why, because everything published except for these two studies, they're not open source. The data is manipulated. The authors and institutions are bribed. And you can prove that by what I mentioned with the New England Journal of Medicine and the fraudulent New England Journal of Medicine Shima Bakuro article that pushed the safety of the vaccine in June of 2021. The Lancet article the year before that villainized. These are fake, fraudulent articles. Nobody has the data. The government won't release any of the data to the public. But there's two studies. All you need to do to find the truth is two studies. One is from Pfizer's themselves. Pfizer themselves legally obligated to release the 90-day post-market analysis. Everybody in the government had that in early 2021. I had it. You had access to it. It was released by a whistleblower. And what does it say on page 7? It's the deadliest, most injurious drug ever in the history of humanity to be rolled out to the public, with 42,086 casualties, including 1,223 dead. And on page 12 is a horrible, horrible summary of the women that got it when they were pregnant. So that's the first source. You don't need to look anywhere else except that data, Pfizer's own data, that the government and Pfizer tried to hide for 75 years, but thank God to ICANN and to attorney Aaron Siri, S-I-R-I, out of ICANN, Informed Consent Action Network. He put in a Freedom of Information Act, and by God, God bless him, even though I had the data and everybody else had the data, he formally got the official copy about a year, 15 months later, of all days, April Fool's Day, 2022. And that Pfizer 5.3.6 was identical to what the whistleblower released over a year before. So there's no excuse. Really, that's the only data you need to look at and that you can trust, because they tried to hide it. But here's a second study that you can trust. And that's the study that I first authored. And I first authored it along with six other authors, and including Claire Rogers, including Michael Deskovich, Megan Redshaw, and Stuart Tankersley, and not to forget, last but not least, Dr. Peter McCullough. Okay, contrast our study that we published. It's all open source data. All of it's open source. We use the exact methods that the FDA demanded, which is biased in their favor. We did everything according to the FDA. We published it in a peer-reviewed journal over a year ago. We looked at 18 different adverse events of pregnancy that I saw with my own eyes in my extremely busy clinical practice. 18 of them, Mark. The FDA uses a safety, what they call a risk ratio. If the risk ratio of a novel vaccine to a, quote, safe vaccine, that's their biased methodology, is two or greater, then that breaches their safety signal. These 18 adverse events that we looked at, all right, abnormal menstrual periods, it wasn't twofold. It was 1,192-fold risk ratio. You look at miscarriage, it wasn't twofold. It was 57-fold. You look at fetal death, a relatively rare, that I saw with my own eyes, and so did everybody all over the world. Massive surge, 10 sigma, 30 sigma, 47 sigma surge, unprecedented in the FDA's own data that risk ratio was not 2. It was 38. And I could go on and on and on with every other one of those 18 severe pregnancy complications. So those are the only two studies that are completely open source, completely available to the entire world now. The entire world can go in and do the exact same methodology with the exact same government's data that we did. And guess what? They come up with the exact same results. Nobody has refuted that study. The rest of the studies, they're cheating. They're manipulated. They're not open source. The authors have horrible, horrible conflicts of interest. They're all employed by like University of California, San Francisco. They've published a lot. Well, they boast on their website, Mark, UCSF. They boast that they're the number one recipient of HHS monies.
What an odd coincidence. You know, we've got to wrap it up here, but, you know, well, how many, do you have an estimate as to the global mortality and morbidity rates?
Yes, I absolutely do, and I stand by it, and it's probably an underestimate. As of last September, the vaccine killed at least 17 million global citizens. My own research, and nobody else has really made brought this to light except me that I'm aware of, worse than the kills, the 17 million killed, and I don't want to offend anybody that's had a family member killed by the vaccine. I don't mean to do that, and I apologize if I come across that way. But to the society, what's more relevant is it's got the highest injure-to-kill ratio ever recorded in military or medical history. Okay, it's got an injure-to-kill ratio of 33.4. Listen, that makes the atomic bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki look like child's play. It makes DES and thalidomide together look like a prenatal vitamin. The butchers Borla and Bansal have killed or injured 585 million global citizens, and I can prove that. I have the data to show that. I'm very confident of that. And this was as of last September.
Yeah, it is a evil and a horror larger than you can imagine, and I've got to let you go. But I always say this, the reason why the government gets away with murder is if they murder people on a big enough scale, everybody's afraid to look at it because you can't deal with truth that is that horrible. But I'm glad there's people out there like you that are willing to risk their careers, risk their reputation to tell us the truth. And doctor, all I can say is keep up the good work, and we're rooting for you.
Thank you so much, Mark McCluskey, and it's an honor and a privilege to be on your platform and to know you.
Well, thank you very much, doctor, and we'll hopefully have you back on. You take care.
Thank you, sir.
Join Mark McCluskey in the battle against globalism. You're listening to Mark McCluskey on Fire. For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com. Mark McCluskey on Fire. This is Mark McCluskey on Fire.
I cannot believe that in this country we are putting up with a government that is lying to us about something which is causing the death and torment on a level which is unprecedented, and no one's going to go to jail. I talk about this all the time, right? You know, if you walk into a 7-Eleven, well, in the old days, now you can steal whatever you want to because there's nothing's against the law now. But in the old days, if you walked into a 7-Eleven in down in Dallas and stole a six-pack of beer, and I can tell you because after I graduated from college and before I started law school, I spent the summer working with a smock on at a convenience store called Mr. M's, and we had somebody come in and steal a six-pack of beer and run out. He tripped going out the front door, fell down on their chest, broke every bottle of beer in that six-pack, but still the Dallas police had a helicopter and about a dozen police cars searching the neighborhood until they hauled him down and put him in jail for stealing that six-pack of Corona, right? That's what law enforcement used to be like. Now we've got a government which is intentionally killing millions of people around the world, injuring untold hundreds of millions around the world. And do you see any police helicopters circling the White House? Do you see Anthony Fauci being hauled out in chains? No one's going to pay the price for this. I think lots and lots of people should pay a very severe price for this. I think that the average human being in this country, the average voter, the average citizen should be so outraged at what they've done here today that they should just absolutely clamor every day for some justice, so some real resolution to this, where the people that have foisted this conspiracy upon us and everybody like them in the future will be so afraid to do it that no one will ever do anything like this again. You know, I'm a trial lawyer. Every once in a while, we ask for punitive damages in lawsuits, and the way you plead for it is you ask for the court to award such amount as is fair and reasonably likely to, in fact, be punitive and act as a deterrent to people similarly situated in the future to deter them from doing this like behavior. In other words, make it hurt so much economically that no one will dare do the same thing again. Well, we need to have that same process right now for this government, for these bureaucrats, for these pharmaceutical corporations, for the CDC, for the National Institute of Health, and God forbid, should we join the World Pandemic Treaty and the World Health Organization and cede our sovereignty to Tedros Ghebreyesus, this communist and son of a gun. But we need to demand some real action. We need to demand some real retribution. We need to put an end to this right now and call all these people on the carpet. But now, we're not going to do that. We're going to worry about, you know, the solar eclipse. You know, how many states in this country have now declared a state of emergency because of a solar eclipse? All right, not the death of millions, not the horrible injury to hundreds of millions, but no, we're going to talk about an eclipse as being an emergency state throughout the country. Well, you know, we had a total solar eclipse. I think it was back in 2017. My farm happened to be right in the path of the totality, and I think we had as long as any place in the country for a total eclipse. And my wife and my daughter and I and our dog sat out there. We couldn't get the dog to wear the eclipse glasses, but we are out there and we watched the eclipse. We thought it was pretty neat. Filmed it. Watched the birds all come out and night birds sing and the cicadas start to croak, and then it got light again and we went home, went back to work. Well, now they're telling us that this is a stinking state of emergency, that they've got to call out the National Guard all over the place because all kinds of bad things are going to happen. Well, I was talking to a Missouri state senator this morning. I say, what the heck's going on? I mean, what's the inside scoop? Why are they perpetrating this pretend crisis upon us for a solar eclipse? And then my mind goes back a few hundred years to when Cortez lands in Mexico, and they see these guys, white guys with beards on these big ships, never seen white people before, never seen a beard before, never seen a ship before, and they had conquistadors on horses, had never seen a horse before, and they were sore afraid, as Linus would say. But they also were about ready to start fighting back against Cortez. But he had an almanac with him, and he knew that there was going to be a solar eclipse. And he told the native Mexicans, as we'd call them, the Native Americans, that the dragon was going to come and eat the sun And if they were good little boys and girls and obeyed Cortez, the dragon would regurgitate the sun and let the sun come back to life, knowing that these poor sons of guns had no idea what a solar eclipse was, and none of them had ever seen it before in their lives. And he conned them with it, right? And he took over, and of course slaughtered and raped and pillaged and all those kinds of fun things. But I was thinking about Cortez this morning when I realized that the government is staging some kind of an event. And maybe it's just a test to see how easily they can roll out a national emergency. Maybe it's just a test to see how easily they can con the American people into thinking that there's a crisis. Maybe it's just a test to see what they can do to frighten people into giving up more and more freedoms. How many more freedoms do we have left? I mean, it's going to be pretty hard for us to give up any more freedoms here pretty shortly, because, and this is my brilliant and subtle segue into another topic, is what do we have left in the way of freedoms in this country? We basically have the freedom to agree with the government or go to prison. I mean, look at January 6th, for example. Look at Donald Trump, for example. Look at poor Rudy Giuliani, for example, who was America's mayor, who is a hero of 911, who turned New York City around virtually single-handedly from a corrupt, crime-ridden, dirty, filthy place to being a beautiful city, orderly, relatively crime-free, lowest murder rate of any big city in the world when Rudy was mayor, to a pariah now where some rampant jury awards $140 million in damages against him because he hurt the feelings of a couple of election judges down in Georgia, some people you've never heard about before. But by God, hurting their feelings is worth $140 million against one of the greatest Americans there is. And so what do Republicans say? What do my fellow Republicans, the people whose party I support, and I'm going to go to the second congressional caucus here in Missouri tomorrow and support Donald J. Trump and support the slate that we're going to elect for the Republican National Convention. And I'm going to support my Republican Party. But by God, sometimes my own party disappoints me. For example, we have a guy who's the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott. I like Greg Abbott. He's done some very good things. But, you know, Republicans used to be advocates for this thing that we called the First Amendment. First Amendment to the United States Constitution. You know, when I was campaigning for Senate, I had these campaign hats that said 1 + 2 = free. F-R-E-E. 1 + 2 = free. First Amendment plus Second Amendment equals freedom. And as I always said, without the Second Amendment, that right to keep and bear arms, all the rest of our freedoms are merely hypothetical. Well, all around the country, they're trying to take away that Second Amendment, particularly in states like Illinois and New York and California. But even in the deep red state of Texas, with Greg Abbott, the deep red governor of the state of Texas, apparently the First Amendment's gone out the window. Apparently, the First Amendment doesn't exist if you're at a state-run institution in Texas, because Greg Abbott has come out against anti-Semitism at Texas colleges, and they're going to start making rules against anti-Semitism. Well, here's an interesting tidbit, right? You know, when I was campaigning for both President Trump and then later on for myself, every once in a while there'd be protesters at our rallies. And my favorite example was at the Kyle Rittenhouse trial when we were up there for a week waiting on the jury to come back. Every day for 8 hours a day from the moment that the jury was brought back into the jury deliberation chambers until the end of deliberation of the day, there were 100 or so communist protesters on the front steps of the Kenosha County Courthouse screaming anti-white, anti-American, anti-democracy slogans, carrying communist flags and espousing every overt communist position on the planet. Well, that wasn't considered to be a violation of free speech. That wasn't considered to be something which was subject to arrest. You can advocate every kind of left-wing communist propaganda you want to and be absolutely scot-free in this country. But what can't you do, all right? What can't you do? You can't say anything on a college campus against Israel or pro-Palestine. And I'm not an advocate for Palestine, but I can tell you this, that you ought to have a right in this country to say anything you want politically as long as you do it nonviolently And if you want to advocate for Palestine, you should have every gosh darn right in the world to do it, because that's what this country is founded on. And, you know, here's an interesting thing. Here's an article from, a week or so ago, published actually March 26th in USA Today. Maryland middle school students face hate crime charges for Nazi salutes, swastikas. The students displayed swastikas, made Nazi salutes, and directed offensive comments to a classmate because of the classmate's religious beliefs. Okay. Well, if you can say that communism, which is responsible for the death of 100 million people in this world during the 20th century, if you can say communist propaganda and you can display a communist flag without it causing you to go to jail, and whether you're a child or an adult, but if you're a child and you display Nazi propaganda, you get arrested. And that was in Maryland. And that same article, they talk about some Massachusetts middle school kids who are also going to go to jail for, quote, hateful, racist online chat that included heinous language and a mock slave auction. Well, that all sounds like political speech to me. That all sounds like something that should be protected by the First Amendment. The test of the First Amendment isn't whether or not you agree with people saying things you agree with. The test of the First Amendment is allowing people the right to say things that you detest, that you hate, that you find abhorrent. But if it's a political opinion and if it's just words, they should have an absolute right to say it. And when you got a governor of a Republican state saying, that's okay, unless it's against Israel, then you get concerned about who's pulling the strings and who's paying the money, okay? And maybe that's the real answer to all these questions. So it's not just Israel, of course. There's all kinds of things that you're just not allowed to say. And Tucker Carlson mentioned this, maybe 6 months ago, that there are certain things in this country which are just absolutely not allowed to be said by anybody in the media, and you can't even say what they are because you can't say what they are because you can't talk about them. But I tell you one thing that's interesting this week. There was a Tennessee congressman, Tim Burchett, B-U-R-C-H-E-T-T, Republican from Tennessee. He was on Maria Bartiromo's show, and he happened to mention that transgender people were suffering from a mental illness. Okay, this is on Fox. This was Maria Bartiromo. All of a sudden, she's like, what? Huh? What? What? We aren't talking about anybody with mental illness. I don't know what the heck you're talking about. We aren't talking about anyone. No, no, no. You can't talk about transgender people being mentally ill. Well, the whole world recognized transgenderism or gender dysphoria as a mental illness until the propaganda took over, right? It's not a matter of medical science. It's not a matter of your genetics. It's a matter of propaganda. We go from recognizing gender dysphoria as a mental illness to transgenderism as a protected class, where you're an evil person if you now say out loud what the entire world recognized as true, and that is that transgender people are suffering from a disease that needs to be treated. They need to be treated as victims of a mental illness as opposed to being superior human beings that have to be worshipped, that have to have a transgender day on Easter Sunday. That's how bass-ackwards our government is. That's what we've allowed to happen. Ladies and gentlemen, the Declaration of Independence says that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that amongst these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that to secure these rights, governments are instituted amongst men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And when we let stuff like this happen, when we let the President of the United States declare Easter Sunday to be Transgender Day of Visibility, that's because we consent to it. We need to withdraw that consent of the governed and shut this government down.
Fighting against totalitarianism. This is Mark McCloskey on Fire.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.